And Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, vaccines certainly the topic of the times. It's an epidemic, and we are just thrilled to have you here as our guest speaker.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Joanne, and thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here and to be able to address my fellow Freedom Club USA club members, and this is a timely topic. I would like to just give a little bit of a correction, though. I don't hold myself out to be an expert in vaccines. I really am an expert in problems associated with vaccines, and I make that distinction because the people who are very pro-vaccine in their stance, they are the ones who claim to be the experts, and they frequently take people to task if you're not a pro-vaccine person saying that you're an expert on vaccines. But after 18,000 hours of my life in the last almost 14 years studying the problems associated with vaccines, I can claim unequivocally that I really am the person who knows the most about problems associated with vaccines, who happens to also be a board-certified medical physician. On my first life, I was a medical doctor. I'm an osteopathic medical doctor, that I was the director of an emergency room in Findlay, Ohio for 12 years. I'm rather proud of the fact that I was the first DO on an all-MD medical staff, one of only four women on the medical staff, and absolutely the youngest person on the medical staff when they made me the director of the ER, which is kind of like the hub of the hospital. And that was a long time ago, and that was my first career, and I was board certified in emergency medicine at that time. I moved to Cleveland, Ohio in 1996, and I opened an integrative medicine practice here where we now have people that come from, I believe, 48 states and about 17 countries at last check to come here and get well and often off their medications. We do a big focus on allergy elimination, on chronic pain conditions, and a whole long list of things that we describe on the website, which is tenpennyimc.com, T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y, I like Iris, M like Mary, Be Like Charlie.com. The IMC stands for Integrated Medical Center. So we do a lot of work there. It was in September of 2000 that I went to my first National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C., and heard about all these problems associated with vaccines that I really hadn't seriously considered at that point in time. I come from three generations of chiropractors in my family, my dad, my grandfather, My three uncles and two cousins were chiropractors, and so I grew up with that chiropractic strongly in my background, and that's why I chose actively to become an osteopathic physician, because I wanted that tool in my toolbox. So after going to the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C. in September of 2000, I came home and started reading papers that were from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, all of the peer-reviewed medical literature that is only from the doctor-level things, like vaccine, the JAMA, the New England Journal of Medicine, the Pediatric Infectious Disease Journal. All of these are mainstream, peer-reviewed studies that were published and that show the problems associated with vaccines. In fact, I started about a year and a half ago another website called VaccineResearchLibrary.com, VaccineResearchLibrary.com, that we have accumulated more than 6,000 articles from the mainstream medical journals. This is not from Conspiratology.com. It's not from Mercola or Natural News, which they do a good job, but those are public articles. These are professional articles that we have accumulated, links and abstracts, and full-text articles where they are available to show the problems associated with vaccines. It is a subscription site. It's there as a subscription to help support financially the researcher's work that gets done for that, because she spends 25 to 40 hours a week pulling out articles and publishing them every week on the New This Week site, and the Scream of the Week is posted on my Facebook page, which now has 84,000 fans looking for solutions to problems associated with vaccines. So for all of you who may not have known who I am or why Tom and Joanne have so kindly asked me to come and talk a little bit about vaccines, that gives you a broad brush, sort of a 4-minute elevator speech of who I am where I come from and why I speak so passionately about problems associated with vaccines, because we have been taught in conventional medical training by the pediatricians out there and the popular press that vaccines are safe, they're effective, they protect you, and they're harmless. And quite frankly, they are none of those things. They are not safe. The studies that are done don't even use a true placebo when they actually do the testing on the vaccines. So there really are no true double-blind placebo-controlled studies that have to do with vaccines, because usually in a vaccine trial, instead of using a placebo, which is a sugar pill or a shot of sterile water or something that is completely inert, the, quote, placebo that is used in a clinical trial is another vaccine or, for example, in the case of Gardasil, which is the vaccine that's given for to little girls and now little boys about cervical cancer, and the HPV vaccine, I'm sorry, the HPV virus, the placebo that was used in the Gardasil trials was a shot of aluminum. So the girls were given either a Gardasil vaccine or a shot of aluminum, and at the end of the analysis when they said that the vaccine had the same number of side effects and was as safe as the placebo, it's because Gardasil has a large amount of aluminum in it, so you were comparing a vaccine with aluminum against a placebo that was a shot of aluminum. And that's just one example of many that I could give you about vaccine safety and how there really isn't any. The clinical trials are only followed for anywhere from 4 days to 2 weeks. Autoimmune dysfunctions and neurological complications can take much longer than that to develop. So the whole concept that vaccines are safe is a misnomer. They're not. The second point, that vaccines are effective. We have been led to believe in our world as consumers and as parents that when you hear the word effective when it comes to vaccines, what we interpret that to mean that vaccines keep you from getting sick. So that if you get an injection of, say, a flu shot or a mumps vaccine or measles or any of these things, that you that it keeps you from getting sick, and therefore it is effective. However, there's another definition of the word effective, which means that from a scientific perspective, if I inject you with a vaccine and you subsequently develop an antibody in your bloodstream, and they do a blood test called a titer test and identify the antibody, then the scientists can rightfully claim that the vaccine is effective. It did what it was intended to do, stimulate your body to develop an antibody. But then the next question is, once you have that antibody, does that protect you and keep you from getting sick? And the answer is, we don't think so. They can't say absolutely yes. They call it protective antibody, but if that's the case, then all of the hundreds of people who have had flu shots would not get the flu, and people who have had measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines multiple times would not get the infection, and that just because you have an antibody doesn't mean you're not going to get sick. As a matter of fact, the CDC studies have shown that even with tetanus, which is kind of the last stronghold in people's minds, and we can talk about tetanus a little bit later, that when the CDC publishes its studies about every 2 to 3 years, looking at there's about 150 to 160 cases of tetanus in the United States per year, of those who fully who contracted tetanus, anywhere from 16 to 20% of the people who developed full-blown tetanus had four or more tetanus shots and had what was considered to be adequate amounts of protective antibody in their system, and they got tetanus anyways. So what does that antibody mean? The scientific literature is now beginning to say more about the fact that what this antibody is a marker of contamination. It's a marker that something happened and transformed in your system, but really at the core base, doesn't have much to do at all, if anything, about keeping you from getting sick. So that says a couple of things. One is, just to review, vaccines are not safe. The safety studies are short. There's no placebo. The vaccines are effective. They create an antibody from a scientific perspective, but they are not effective in terms of protecting you from getting sick. So So effective and protective are not synonyms when it comes to vaccines. And the third part about that we've been led to believe that vaccines are safe, effective, protective, and harmless, we know that's absolutely not the case. In fact, there are more than 12,000 reports of vaccine injuries every year to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It's been estimated that less than 10% of all vaccine injuries are actually reported. So that means that those 12,000 reports could actually be anywhere between 120,000, between 12,000, 120,000, maybe even 1.2 million adverse events that are not being reported. And what can be reported can be anything from a sore arm to a seizure to a death. And the adverse events, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System has been in place since 1986. And when it was actually designed as part of the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program that was signed into law by President Ronald Reagan back in 1986. It was set up initially to be a no-fault, non-litigious type of system so that if you got a vaccine and you had an injury, you could apply for compensation through the government. As it turned out, the government then became very litigious and fought every single case of a vaccine claim through the what is the Federal Court of Claims that we call the Vaccine Court. And the person who actually decides the case of whether the vaccine actually injured you or not is an appointed judge called a special master, has no training in vaccines, vaccinology, is not a medical person, doesn't understand anything about the science, either the pro-vaccine or the against-vaccine side, just makes a determination based on the witnesses whether or not you are telling the truth that you got a shot and you had a long list of symptoms that can be anywhere, like I already said, from a sore arm to seizure to autoimmune disease to fibromyalgia to a long list of neurological disorders. And up until a few years ago, it was actually that less than 25% of people who made a claim to the court actually got compensated. It's a little bit better than that now, but not much. And people can wait anywhere from 3 to 10 years, sometimes longer, for the court to adjudicate and decide whether or not they're going to get a settlement. It's a horrible system. It's a terrible system. And over $1.2 billion, with a B, $1.2 billion has been paid out over the last almost 20 years in vaccine injury compensation claims. Now, when you stack up that amount of money against how few claims are actually filed and how many people, and of the ones that get filed, how many of them actually end up getting compensated, you can imagine that if everyone who had an injury was actually claimed and made the claim and was actually compensated, how many hundreds of billions of dollars in injury claims that would make. Now, just imagine for just a minute of whether or not that vaccine, that instead of it talking about a vaccine and the vaccine claims of what we're doing there, imagine that what was causing all of those different types of injuries and court cases and devastations in life was a vitamin. Or a supplement. Could you imagine how long that a vitamin or supplement would be allowed to be on the market? Like less than a nanosecond. It would have been taken off and people would have been in jail and companies would have been shut down a long time ago. But because we have this belief system, and that's exactly what it is when it comes to vaccines, it's a belief system. It's based on fraudulent science and a lot of information that really is skewed by the pharmaceutical industries who fund the studies. Because of that, we have this belief system that we must continue to vaccinate our children. And now up through 1985, there were only 3 vaccines. Now they are multiple doses of 16 different vaccines. And we are so afraid of a fever and a rash that parents are willing to inject poison into their children with animal DNA, stray viruses, heavy metals, known carcinogens, into their precious little bundles called their children in exchange for ostensibly trying to prevent a fever, a cough, and a rash, which is what most of the childhood illnesses are. So we've kind of covered the, so all of this sort of comes down to me that I said, and people will say to me many, many times, they said things like, you mean there's like no vaccines, none that you think are any good or that we should have? Well, health cannot come through a needle. And injecting known carcinogens, stray viruses, dog kidney cells, monkey kidney cells, insect DNA, all of these different things into our children, which is what are in these vaccines, how can we possibly think that that's going to do anything for our health? How can we possibly think that's going to do anything to keep us from getting sick and has no long-term consequences? Because every single vaccine has the potential for a long-term consequence. And even people that would say things like, you know, I've had all these vaccines and I seem to be just fine. I'm in the military. They loaded me up multiple times. You have no idea what the long-term consequences of that is to your DNA and your genetics that you can pass down to your children and your grandchildren, because now we're seeing some genetic jumps, that things that are happening in, like, my body, if I had children, I may not see it in my children, but it could be passed on to my grandchildren. We've seen that in mouse studies with dioxin. We've now seen it with several different things in terms of medications. And we have the sickest, most unhealthy children today that we've ever had before. I mean, I'm 55 years old, and those of us that are in our 50s, if you ask us when we were in school, how many kids in our class were on chronic daily medications? And the answer is like none or very few. When you look at our schools now and say, how many kids are on chronic daily medications multiple times? It's most of them. It's 60-70%. These kids are missing recess because they have to go to the nurse's station to get their daily doses of medication. And we're talking ADD, ADHD, a seizure disorder, asthma, allergies, eczema, insulin-dependent diabetes, a long list of neurological disorders, a long list of autoimmune diseases, which we did not see two generations ago. Now, a lot of people might say, well, it's probably because of the fluoride in the water. What about genetically modified food? What about the chemtrails? Yes, in my opinion, those all play their role. But if you've been vaccinated or your children have been vaccinated, particularly your children, all of those kids got exposed to vaccines long before they had their first bite of McDonald's in genetically modified food. And now we know that even the placenta doesn't really protect children, because several years ago when the Environmental Working Group did a study on cord blood and showed that there are more than 200 chemicals that were in cord blood that of a newborn, we know that things in the environment go into the baby and can make them toxic before they even come through the birth canal. Then they come through the birth canal, and the first thing we do is give them a shot of vitamin K, and within 48 hours of life, we give them the most unnecessary vaccine ever developed, which is hepatitis B. That starts the clock clicking. And then we give them latex exposures as we're bathing them. The mothers go to breastfeed them, and the first download of colostrum maybe have a lot of mercury in it because the mom's mouth is loaded up with mercury fillings. And then at 2 months of age, and you're 60 days old, we give kids now seven shots, seven vaccines, sometimes more. How can we not think that this is a problem? I frequently use the analogy of saying it's like if you've ever gone to Florida and gone to Cape Canaveral and watched the liftoff of the space shuttle, you know, we have months and years of preparation of getting everything exactly right. And then when all systems are go and you push all those buttons and the rockets take off and you've got this really shaking thing that's happening just as the space shuttle is lifting off the ground, going into the air, what if at that point we went and dumped 255-gallon drums of salt into the engine? It would be a disaster. Everything would fall apart. Well, birth is like liftoff. It's coming through the birth canal, or even with C-sections, it's liftoff. That baby's circulation has to change from the mother's to its own. Its lungs have to open up, and they have to start breathing. The GI function has to happen. Their immune system is suddenly exposed to all these different things. It has to start talking to each other and saying, you know, push this button, do this, do that, and all these other things that have to happen at birth. And what do we do at liftoff? a hepatitis B vaccine, a vitamin K
Excuse
shot
me.
That has
Dr.
9 milligrams of alcohol.
Dr. Sherry, if I might interrupt you for just one moment. Tom, we've lost our connection on the secondary line. If you could just check that out, please.
It's looking good from here. Somebody might have dropped off independently, but we're good.
Okay.
Continue, Sherry. Sorry.
Okay. And so at Liftoff, we created a disaster. And this started in 1991, and it's gotten worse since then. And that's when we saw the epidemic of autism start. We saw the epidemic of asthma, allergies, eczema, all these things start. So I give you this backdrop, about 20 minutes worth of background, a little bit about me, a little bit about the laws. And one of the other things, one more piece about the laws is that parents always, often say, oh, well, I have to get my kid vaccinated or they're not going to get into school. And someday after the Freedom Club AR happens, I'm going to put up billboards all over the country that says, no shot, no school, not true. And I'm going to put them on major highway billboards all over the country so parents know they can start questioning that, because that's not true. In every state except West Virginia and Mississippi, we have a religious exemption. And every state, and there are 19 states which have what is called a philosophical exemption, which means I've looked at the risk of the vaccine. I've looked at the risk of chickenpox, mumps, and measles. I think I'm going to err on the side of keeping my child healthy from good food, lots of love, good water, get them to bed on time, give them vitamins, make them eat right, and I'm going to take a risk that I can keep my child healthy without the vaccine instead of taking on the risk of a vaccine, which can be injecting me with chemicals and animal cells, has an unknown consequence, which can be anything from a sore arm to a death. I don't think I want to take on that risk. I'm going to take on the risk of keeping my child healthy and safe, have them wear a helmet when they bicycle and teach them how to swim and all these different things. So I've tried to give you as much of an overview as I can in a short period of time of understanding where I come from and my research and my background and who I am. And I'm board certified in 3 medical specialties and what I do, why I do what I do. A little bit about why these vaccines are so dangerous. A little bit about the fact that they're not safe, they are not effective because they don't protect you, and they absolutely can cause harm. We talked a little bit about the laws, the vaccine injury reporting system, that anybody can report an injury. Talked a little bit about no shots, no school, not true. And I think that that gives you sort of an overbrush of a lot of information. In fact, sometimes people would come up to me in the past and say, gee, Dr. Tenpenny, I know that you I've been told that you know an awful lot about vaccines. What can you tell me? And I would always kind of laugh because I would say I used to do a 2-day, 16-hour seminar on these problems. So unless we narrow it down, we're going to be here a long time. And so I've tried to take that 16 hours of what I would consider to be some of the most highlighted information, the things that I think parents need to know the most. And I'm assuming that a lot of the members on this call probably know a lot of those things anyway, but this just gives you some powerful punch. And on my 84,000 Facebook fans, I created a site on Facebook. It's Dr. Tenpenny on Vaccines, where people come there. We don't debate. We don't argue. We have a zero tolerance rule for people who come there and try to cause trouble and try to agitate, because most people who are not vaccinating have done a lot of research, a lot of soul searching, a lot of praying, going back and forth, and so they've made their decisions. They're not bad parents. In my opinion, they're the best parents on the planet. And we've created a place where they can come and they can meet with a bunch of like-minded people, because they're out there fighting the battles of their neighbors who think that they are child abusers for not vaccinating their kids. And we've created a place where people, like-minded people, can come together and they can feel like they're not so crazy. And so in that place, we don't tolerate anybody coming there causing problems in our neighborhood. I actually have a committee that helps to keep things straight over there. So I encourage all of you to come and join. And I give you sort of a brief overview. And I told Tom and Joanne I wanted to just talk about 30 minutes and give an overview and then just open it up to the members for questions, because I'm sure all of you have specific questions. And it's the reason you've taken the time out tonight to be on the call. I would encourage you to ask a short question and not give a long dissertation on your background with that. And also, I'm not here to diagnose or treat or to listen to your health condition or problems. I cannot treat you over the phone and across state lines. So please don't ask me to do that because I won't do it. But if you've got specific questions about vaccines or vaccine injuries or how you file a claim, or we could talk a little bit about vaccines and flu shots and the healthcare workers, I can give you some tips on vaccines and divorce cases on how I suggest that people do things like that. But I want to take the time to just open up the floor to questions so that you're getting your needs met during this phone call.
Okay, so let's give out the PIN code so people can join us on this side of the board.
Well, Sherry, one, and I know it's very difficult to see the future of an infant, but you probably have seen enough of this to say, well, here's a child with all these vaccinations today. What kind of problems do they see in their teens and their 20s and 30s and so forth that are starting to manifest that can indeed be tracked back to those vaccines? Have you got any evidence or ideas on
that? Oh, well, yeah. I mean, because the types of disorders that you start to develop when you're in grade school just continues forward. Asthma, allergies, eczema, ADD, ADHD, insulin-dependent diabetes. We have an epidemic of insulin-dependent diabetes of children under the age of one. And we can track that back to Klassen's work, who the pharmaceutical industry has done everything they can to discredit it, of looking at the HIV vaccine, the hepatitis B vaccine, and the Prevnar vaccine for strep as being associated with an increased incidence of insulin-dependent diabetes. That lasts for their entire life. We see all kinds of problems with a long list of neurological complications. And it's not just autism. I mean, everybody's like, vaccines don't cause autism. Well, as a matter of fact, they do, because the vaccine court has actually paid compensation for the MMR vaccine causing autism in at least 12 cases that we know of for sure, and then sealed the court documents so that we couldn't go out and be talking about this incessantly. So it's more than autism. It's a long list of neurological disorders of encephalopathy and seizure disorders and something called ADM, which is a demyelinating disease in the periphery, and all of these kids end up in wheelchairs. And, I mean, so it's a lifetime of complications, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, all kinds of bowel diseases. It's a long-term thing, Tom. In fact, I've said for many, many years that if we could finally get the study published that looks at the health of vaccinated children versus the health of unvaccinated children, we would see such a overwhelming amount of information showing how sickly these vaccinated kids are and how many different medications they're on, how many days of school they miss, how many different complications and tests and upper GIs and lower GIs and CAT scans and things like they have to do that. The vaccinated kids are the driver of the pharmaceutical industry because most of the unvaccinated kids barely get sick. They're not on antibiotics. They don't have any other things wrong. They barely have anything wrong with them. Now, there are exceptions to that because there are exceptions to everything in healthcare. So I don't want anybody to say, well, I know a kid that's never been vaccinated and has autism, or I know a kid that's never been vaccinated and has a seizure disorder. That's true, but those are the rare exceptions when you look at how many of the kids that have these disorders that have been fully vaccinated. And so this is the driver of the pharmaceutical industry. In fact, the vision statement of the pharmaceutical industry is that every human on the planet will be on a minimum of 2 daily prescription medications every day for life. So what better place to start that with a 2-day-old baby? Start making them sick, break down their immune system, start making them sick, cause all of these disorders to make them be the driver of the pharmaceutical industry, the testing, all the tests that they get, and all the drugs that they get ongoing for life.
Dr. Sherry, I have a question for you, if I might. I am very close to Princeton University, and recently there was a small outbreak of meningitis. And I realize how serious that is. However, they brought in vaccines that were fast-tracked, amazingly quick, that had never been tested before, and I couldn't believe how many people lined up to take these vaccines. Do you have any comment about that?
Yeah, I actually wrote a paper about that that, like, bounced all over the Internet and showed that they did. They fast-tracked a vaccine that had never been tested in this country, and, in fact, several countries in Europe, they had refused to approve it because there was no proof that it would work. They had not really seriously studied the side effect profile, and they were the countries in Europe were very, the company that actually made the vaccine was very disappointed because the European countries wouldn't do it. So they've created a little incidence over here in the U.S. so that they could fast-track this vaccine and get it in the door. That's what the vaccine companies do. Now, meningitis can be serious. Yes, it can be. But it's a rare and unusual event. When I was an emergency room physician, and I worked in the ER for more than 12 years, I think in 12 years I maybe saw 4 cases of it. And it doesn't spread like wildfire. It's not contagious like the flu is or like chickenpox is or like measles can be. It doesn't spread through the air like that. So this hysteria over one case of meningitis that breaks out, which, you know, I'm not trying to minimize the fact that this can be a bad disease, you can die from it or have serious complications from it, but it's a one-off disease. It's a onesie-twosie disease. It's not an epidemic. And parents who don't even take the time to think about what they're giving their child and injecting in their arm or what this can do long-term, just because, oh, my God, I got to protect them from this disease, and they never even stop to think, well, I'm going to give them the shot. Does anybody even think, know for sure that they're going to get the shot and it's going to keep them from getting sick? The people who are sheep around these vaccines, it's staggering to me. It's staggering to me. And I think that the reason I've been able to hang in there this long and continue to disseminate this information and get it out there is because now, you know, when I first started this back in September of 2000, there was just a handful of us that were doing this. And I was told early on, you know, Sherry, you're a medical doctor. You can use medical literature, CDC literature. You can analyze the data. You can put it out there from a scientific perspective. You don't have to just do anecdotal stuff. And at the time, there was only a few people. Now I think somebody told me the other day that there were, I believe the number was like 427 anti-vaccine Facebook pages now. There's tens of millions of people who are questioning all over the world. There are millions of unvaccinated kids now or partially vaccinated or barely vaccinated kids in the world. I think that sooner or later the 100th monkey is going to show up. And the 100th monkey is when everything sort of flips and turns and the entire paradigm shifts and we change our belief system, because that's what this is. It's a belief system. And so I guess I kind of went around the bush there a little bit, Joanne, to say that it made me very sad that I was actually on 2 television shows and I was interviewed, I can't tell you how many radio programs, saying, just stop and think about this for a minute. Vaccine has not been proven to work. It's never been tested in this country. They're fast-tracking it in because there were 3 kids that had meningitis. Should we stop and think about that a little bit?
And absolutely. No,
everybody just plows forward.
Well, excellent. We have some hands up here. Joanne, why don't we go ahead and get started with our first question?
We do.
And, again, keep your question.
Hi, your first name and your question for Dr. Sherry.
Hi, my name is John, and a while back I got a vaccination for pneumonia, and this was probably 10 years ago, doctor, and I was wondering if that has any effect, that it would not hinder me but protect me from pneumonia, and from what I'm understanding, the answer is a no, I'm assuming.
The answer would be no. And when you get a pneumonia shot, that's like getting 21 vaccines at the same time. Because they inject 21. Because they inject the 21 vaccine antigens in that one syringe. And so you have 21 different pathways that have to make an antibody. When the pneumonia shot came out, probably back in the late 80s,
it was a shot that they said you only had to get once in a lifetime because it protected you for a once in a lifetime. Then a few years later, they said, well, we don't think it lasts a full lifetime, maybe once every 10 years. Well, we think it lasts 10 years, maybe we ought to do it every 5 years. And now we're doing it maybe every other year. And I think they're pushing it towards annually. And so does it work? Well, that goes back to what I said initially. You create an antibody. Does the antibody keep you from getting sick? The answer is no. The other thing is that because they have selected out a lot of these bacteria, you don't see them around as much anymore. And so now nature affords a vacuum, and so the weaker bacterial strains sort of go away, and the more virulent, stronger ones come to the forefront. So we've got an incident, you know, it may decrease the incidence of the bacteria out there, and it may decrease the incidence of infection to somewhat, but to what is the exchange? The pneumonia shot has a high amount of phenol in it. It's known to be very toxic to the kidney. If it does eliminate some of the bacteria that are out there in the universe, the stronger bacteria fall into the gap. So now we've eliminated Haemophilus influenza B. That was one vaccine. And when that happened, we started getting a lot more strep. We came up with Prevnar, and that eliminated some of the strep bacteria. When that started going away, then we started seeing more meningitis, and now we created two meningitis vaccines. And if that bacteria starts to go away, now we're starting to see MRSA, and we're starting to see these superbugs that are not responding to anything. You can't be fooling Mother Nature with these shots.
Yep. So tell me one more quick question, if you folks don't mind. Is there any way people could clean their body from these vaccines once they're injected, or it's pretty much stays that way?
Well, unfortunately, you know, once you vaccinate, you can't unvaccinate. But there are things that you can do to try to improve your health. You know, one is lots of vitamin A, lots of vitamin C, lots of vitamin D, you know, juicing. Homeopathy, people that do really good work with homeopathic medicine and homeopathy is probably the best thing that I've seen for reversing problems associated with vaccines and vaccine injuries, because it works to stimulate the bodies from the inside out to help to repair damage that has come down the road.
Okay. Doc, I thank you, and I thank you, Tom and Joanne, and I won't take any more of anybody's time, but thank you for the knowledge.
You're welcome. Hi, your first name, please.
Is it 513?
Yes.
Good evening. Thank you so much. I'm calling from Bogota, Colombia. We have my very dear friend in Richmond Hill, Canada. My question to the doctor this evening would be actually two questions, if I may. What about the most recent vaccine given to girls in Canada, arguing that it is an anti-cervical cancer vaccine? It is my understanding that it is to make girls infertile. Do you know anything about that? That's my first question, doctor.
Okay, the first question, that's about the Gardasil vaccine, okay? And the Gardasil vaccine has two strains in it, two viral strains in it that are supposed to prevent cervical cancer caused by those two particular strains. There are actually about 15 strains that can cause cervical cancer. So with girls, it's going to give them a very false sense of security. If they get the shot, they don't feel like they need to go through pap tests anymore because it's uncomfortable and it's embarrassing. And so they feel like they're protected from cervical cancer, and they're not. The other two strains in the vaccine are for venereal warts. And there have been a large number of reports that have come out that girls come down with a horrible case of unrelenting venereal warts after they get the vaccine. Now, to your point about the infertility, one of the ingredients in the Gardasil vaccine is polysorbate 80. Polysorbate 80 is used in the food industry as a flow agent. So when food is, like frosting and things like that that are going through tubes and to get into cans, the polysorbate 80 makes it more of a flow agent. Polysorbate 80 is in the DPT vaccine, which kids get 5 doses of that by the time they're born up till they're 5 years of age. Excuse me. And repeated exposures to polysorbate 80 can cause anaphylactic shock. Repeated doses of polysorbate 80 have been shown in mice studies to cause ovarian atrophy in female mice and testicular atrophy in male mice. There's been just one study that has shown that. But what in the female mice, what the polysorbate 80 did is it causes the ovaries to shrivel up, the uterus to shrink, and to not be able to be stimulated by estrogen in order to get to a place of being pregnant. So is the intent to sterilize the girls? I guess it depends on how conspiratorial you want to be. Is the maybe accidental outcome that these girls down the road are not going to be able to get pregnant? I think that's a very real possibility.
Those are very sad news for those of us whose daughters have had the vaccine, particularly because, for example, in my case, at my daughter's school in Toronto, they were all given the shots, even without the parental approval. Well, we must trust in God. But pertaining to the same vaccine, what about the warts? Would it not have to do with something with the fact that the girls will also have a false sense of security and be more sexually active than otherwise?
Well, that's one of the thoughts. And one of the things, when they tried to bring the vaccine to market back, I think that went to market in about 2006. And that was one of the arguments against it, was that would it lead to an increased level of promiscuity? I guess there's no way of monitoring that for sure, but that was one of the thoughts about that. And would it also mean that the girls, even if they were having the same amount of sex, would they have unprotected sex because they wouldn't be so worried about catching some sort of the warts or, you know, the virus or something from the little boy? So I don't know what the outcome of that is. That was one of the arguments. About 2 years ago, they started also giving the Gardasil vaccine to little boys because they say that the little boys are the carrier of the virus that gets injected into the little girls when they have sex. And so, in my opinion, all that was about, for the most part, was just Merck's ability to double their market share. I mean, they got 50% of the population out there that wasn't getting the vaccine. So let's come up with this story and show that somehow it's these dirty little boys that are contaminating these little girls, and they need to get the shot too. So always remember, it's all about the money. It's always, always, always all about the money. It's not about health. It's not about protecting people. It's not about trying to decrease the incidence of disease. And so you can say that about the cancer industry. You can say that about the HIV industry. Think if suddenly there was a cure for cancer. Think if suddenly there really was a cure for breast cancer and all these people running around with their little pink ribbon things, raising money for the pharmaceutical industry, which is all they're doing, really. If, you know, in the last 40 years, you think we would have come up with a cure for breast cancer by now? We don't want a cure. Why would we want a cure? We would take out a couple billion dollar sector of research, and we would take out a big sector of the drugs that are promoted and the people that are the bench researchers and the people that go door to door and they're the sales reps and all the people that write the marketing materials. We'd take out a huge swatch of industry if there was a cure. There's never going to be a cure. Never. The cure is not going to come through a needle, and it's not going to come through a pill, and it's not going to come through an IV therapy. Being healthy is an inside-out phenomenon. It starts from within and goes out. It doesn't start from the outside and be injected into your body.
Yes, thank you so much for that, because I wanted, before my second question, I wanted to make a comment. You just said yourself that it comes from within towards the outside of the body and becoming healthy. If only we, most humans, had access to good quality food and not GMOs. That would help us all try to counteract or counterbalance, as you were just saying, a good course of vitamin A and D and C and, yes, all the other good stuff that comes with good food. But not everybody, unfortunately, nowadays has either the right amount or the right kind of food. But anyway,
people always have choices, and they always have access. I mean, you can choose what now, because not every morsel of food that goes through your mouth is GMO. There's still plenty of non-GMO foods out there. You can grow your own. You can make choices about exercise or not, drinking purified water or not, drinking fruits and vegetables that you raise or you get from a co-op, or you have some idea who the farmer is who's raising your animals and your steers and your cows and your pigs and your chickens. You can make choices about the types of food you eat. The problem is that people are unconscious about their poor choices. They are not consciously making choices. So if we make conscious choices about all of these things to the best of our ability, and it's never going to be 100%, and we got the deck stacked against us. But we can do better than what we're doing now.
I totally agree, Doctor, and that we have the freedom of choice. I totally agree with you. As pertaining to cancer, it is to my understanding, to my best of understanding, any and all types of cancer is curable with a serious course of sodium bicarbonate as the breaking of the fast before each of the three meals. I have seen it myself, evidence worldwide, but not many people believe in the cure of cancer by a small dose of sodium bicarbonate, breaking the fast of the three meals, but it is cured. Undoubtedly. And my second question is, which is not really a question, again, another comment. The fact of what you were just mentioning pertaining that it is the global consciousness and that it is our new set of beliefs pertaining to the fact that we need to vaccinate in order to upkeep the good health of our children or ourselves to prevent, as was of course the case of the meningitis at Cambridge. I myself, while at Boston University, had to be given the shot for chickenpox because there was a terrible, not a mild, a terrible break of chickenpox through the city. But as
well, now you're believing that vaccine did something to break that. And so that's a philosophical difference that we're going to have, because I will never think, ever, that anything that comes through the needle and is going to try to keep you, to prevent you from getting sick. And I don't care how bad the outbreak is. I don't care if it's a pandemic.
Thank you.
I just don't.
Thank you for saying that, because that was my comment. I concur with you. We should not believe it. But thanks for your knowledge and your generosity of spirit by sharing your knowledge, your expertise, which can never be improvised. Many of us are now being reinforced in our belief in that nothing that comes through the needle will help us maintain or prevent a dis-ease, yes, in our health. So my comment is we should try to keep the common belief and the common consciousness in that we need not the needle, yes, in order to keep ourselves healthy and avoid the dis-ease of health. I concur with you, Doctor. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
And thank you.
You know, one of the things I've said for the longest time, and I use this as a tagline on one of my email addresses, vaccination, a 200-year mistake. When they first started doing this back in the late 1800, and inoculating, literally injecting cow pus into people and saying, oh, we've created this entire industry, and we're going to pass a law the first mandatory vaccination law was passed in 1853 in the UK. They had subsequent ones that had teeth, to where if you didn't vaccinate your children, they arrested you, put you in jail, took all your property and sold it until you agreed to vaccinate your children. It's a 200-year mistake. It needs to, you know, we had no knowledge of immunology, we had no knowledge of anything, and we have propagated this myth and this false belief for over 200 years. And it's my opinion, after 18,000 hours of studying this, the vaccination needs to go away like bloodletting and leeches and arsenic and chamomile and trepanation. Trepanation was when they used to drill holes in your head to let the evil spirits come out. I think vaccination needs to go in that same category.
Sherry, would you care to comment on the sodium bicarbonate?
I do a lot of work with cancer patients. Cancer is a very complicated disease. It's very complicated. And there are many ways up the mountain with that, and I believe that there's a lot of different causes of cancerous conditions. I think the number one condition that is – the one number one thing that's overlooked with cancer and is not addressed directly is to ask the patient, what do you think caused this? Because when you ask patients that, I will tell you in my experience, unequivocally, if you really they really get real, they'll point back to some big emotional hurt, some big disappointment, embarrassment, loss, fear, a horrible thing that happened to them. It's the core source of their emotional thing, which then causes a shift in their genetics and causes a, you know, this thing called cancer. We never address that and get rid of it. And so a lot of people think you can change cancer with bicarbonate or with vitamin C or with various solutions and things that are out there. I think there's a lot of things that can work, but I do not believe that there is anything that works 100% for everybody. And I think the overarching thing of getting rid of the emotional piece is the most overlooked piece in all of cancer therapy.
You took a page out of my book, because if you go to our BioRenew site, you'll see a dis-ease list of 300 ailments. And if you look down, you see cancer, and there it is, anger and unresolved bitterness. Isn't that interesting? So it fits exactly into your theory here. It's more than that. This has been verified, and we've had folks just do a QE session, and their cancers just heal by releasing that inner core issue that they were holding for many, many years. You're right on the money on that one. So we've seen it. We've seen all kinds of ailments disappear. Every ailment has an emotional root, I find. But you can also, as you say, bypass the natural immune system of the body by sticking a needle through the barriers that were to protect you and bypassing them, and you can literally create your own disease with a needle, as we are discussing here tonight.
You know, one of the things I really want people to hear is, and I really appreciate what the last caller said in the comment, but there is not a silver bullet in cancer. I mean, you can't say, you know, bicarb always works for all cancers, because that's not true. You can't say it's high-dose vitamin C or chelation or hyperbaric. There really isn't anything. And for every individual person, you need to have a little bit of all of it. And it's going to vary from person to person. But, Tom, you and I are in total agreement about the core source of the emotional things. In fact, I've often said that it's not going to happen in my lifetime, but maybe at some point in the future, when anybody goes to the doctor for any ailment whatsoever, the first place that we're going to start is with that emotional release. Let's start here and then see what symptoms are left.
We do that every Thursday, folks, or every other Thursday, excuse me. We call it QE. So please join us and do something good for yourself. Well, we're going to double-click here, Joanne, and move on to our next caller. Well, thank you so much for our project.
Okay. Hi, this is Marlis. Dr. Sherry, thank you so much for your work. Really appreciate it. I agree with you wholeheartedly on what you've said. I just wonder if you could comment on two things, and I would like to add a comment. There are several videos on YouTube, Bill Gates speaking, saying that vaccines are not the only way to reduce the population. and there's two videos on YouTube of him saying that. Also, I was wondering if you have any notes of Bart, what happened to, I think it was Merck that sold some vaccinations to either Finland or Sweden or something like that, and they were laced with cancer virus, and so they returned, but was there any punishment or anything with that? Did you hear, or do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, the first thing with Bill Gates, excuse me, you know, Agenda 21 is alive and well. He's part of it.
Yeah.
And so,
we need to get rid of vaccine.
Yes.
Well,
absolutely.
And I actually, as part of the project that I'm working on for you, Tom, I just pulled up this document that came, and I believe it came from UNICEF, that it was the 50 top vaccine influencers worldwide, and Bill Gates is listed as number one. Melinda Gates is listed as number three. The president and CEO of Avenis is number two. And so this is, yes, so they have an agenda. And I think, I'm not so sure, my personally, because, you know, I don't kind of write on that conspiracy stuff in a public forum, but if it's not about depopulation, it's certainly about money, and it's certainly about making people sick. And it's about driving that industry because, you know, if we take the charge out of talking about vaccines and say, let's talk about carburetors. I'm a carburetor manufacturer. My job as CEO and president of this carburetor company is to sell as many carburetors as I possibly can to as many people. In fact, I'm going to pass laws to make sure that every person out there has to buy a carburetor. And if that carburetor breaks, makes you sick, that's crazy. I'm going to pass laws and put together a bunch of papers, prove it. That carburetor has nothing to do with making you sick. And if you take the charge out of the polarization of the vaccines and you put it into the fact that it's a widget, it's a pharmaceutical widget that they have, that they look at us as nothing more than a repository of their widgets, because every widget that they can stuff into our body, rather as a pill or a potion or a cream or a vaccine or anything like that, that just drives their money. It's just a widget. And we should have the right to not have to buy a widget. We should, you know, I work part-time for a Fortune 200 company here in Cleveland, and they're in the manufacturing sector. And I'm pretty good friends with the CEO, and this is a $13 billion a year company, and he's a good friend of mine, and he's very much on the same page as all of this conversation. And I remember one time I was having lunch with him, and he said, you know, Sherry, I would just love it. If somebody could pass laws that said that every human on the planet had to buy my O-rings and had to buy my refrigeration units and had to do all of the things that I do in the hydraulics division, wouldn't that just be great if I could get the law behind me so that everybody had to buy one of these things? Because when you take charge out of that polarization of the vaccine stuff, then you can have a conversation that really does make it look insane. So back to your question. Bill Gates is like listed as the number one most prominent influencer. What you said about the vaccine that had the cancer viruses in them, almost all of them have cancer viruses in them. The ones that are made from avian serum and bovine serum, both have stray viruses in them that are known to cause a variety of types of cancer. The polio vaccine is made from monkey kidney cells that has the SV40 vaccine in it that can cause lymphoma, leukemia, brain, and bone cancer. The flu shots have viruses in them, avian viruses, that both of them can turn on genes to cause breast cancer. I mean, this is all documented out of the medical literature. This is not conspiracy theory or something I made up. This is stuff I read in published articles. So I don't know the story specifically that you were talking about Merck and withdrawing. I don't know that story. But I know that just on a daily basis, people are getting injected with vaccines that have virus in them that have the potential of causing cancer.
Wow. Wow. Well, you told me something I didn't know. And I keep myself pretty abreast on stuff, so I had no idea that it was that. Huh. Wow. Wow. So I'm with you, boy. I sure would have. When they came out with the whooping cough, and we had supposedly some epidemic up here in Washington State of whooping cough. I think they called it an epidemic. I think there was 1,200 kids got it.
So you have 12,000 people a year reporting a vaccine injury, which is doesn't mean anything. You have 1,200 kids that run around with a cough, and it's an epidemic.
Right. So if you wanted everybody, this billboard said, whooping cough outbreak, get your shot, get your vaccination. I wanted to rent the space underneath it and said, and have it put on their autism epidemic, don't get any vaccinations.
Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, your first name, please.
Hi, Joanne. This is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Thank you, Dr. Thank you, Dr. Tenpenny. I'm a little unclear. Say somebody, for example, a child, grandchild has had the vaccines. Is there any kind of a regimen you can put them on to detoxify their body, in just simple terms? Or is there no simple answer to that?
There's really no simple answer, primarily because, you know, every child has a different genetics, every child has a different diet, every child has a different environment, and each vaccine is going to act differently in each child. So it's just a general overall detox of cleaning out your lymphatics, cleaning out your liver, cleaning out your colon, so making sure the kids poop every day, every single day. Making sure that they get to bed on time, because even teenagers need 12 hours of sleep at night. So that's really important. If you can work with somebody that does homeopathy in terms of detoxing their system, that's important. Vitamin D is a really important for getting all this stuff out of your system. I mean, I've got kids even at 6 months of age. I mean, if they're kind of sickly, I'll put them on as much as 2,000 IUs of vitamin D a day. This whole nonsense about 400 IUs is the RDI for vitamin D, because you got to be so afraid of vitamin D toxicity, came out of a myth. Well, it wasn't really a myth. It was actually a really thing that happened back in the 1940s, that there was a ship that was sailing through the Arctic Circle from, I believe, the UK going through Canada, and it got iced in for the winter, and they ran out of food, and they started eating polar bear fat. And polar bear fat has some of the highest concentration of vitamin D, polar bear meat and probably the fat, highest concentration of vitamin D of any type of ingestible food on the planet. And these sailors spent all winter long ingesting this vitamin D. And by the spring, when they thawed out or when people found them or whatever, they had all these neurological symptoms of vertigo, dizziness, all kinds of things going on with their, they couldn't think clearly, they had vision disturbances, and they determined that it was because of, from a vitamin D toxicity. Now, I'm not exactly sure how they determined that, but that was the ended up of the diagnosis, and out of that came this idea that we have to be really, really, really concerned about too much vitamin D, because if you take more than 400 IUs a day, you could get toxic from that. Well, that's really not true. And the new normal of vitamin D is about 2,000 units a day. And my patients in the wintertime, I have them on anywhere between 10,000 and 20,000 units of vitamin D. They'll test their blood a couple of times and make sure that that their level stays under 100. But here's the problem is that most of the time, doctors will test your blood. They'll do a 25-hydroxy vitamin D test. And the normal range on the test is 30 to 100. And if your level is 31, they'll tell you it's in the normal range, when actually you need to have that level above 70 and as close to 100 as you can get it to be for it to be actually therapeutic. Therapeutic in protecting you from viral illnesses, therapeutic in increasing or decreasing your risk of breast, colon, and prostate cancer. It needs to be at an upper level approaching 100 in people that don't have severe renal disease. That's a little bit different animal, and I won't go into the specifics of that. But back to your question, I mean, vitamin D at least 2,000 units a day, homeopathic detox. If people are a little bit older, they might want to do like a liver cleanse, a gallbladder cleanse. Make sure that they're eating enough roughage or eating prunes or whatever it takes. Get them off the processed foods so that they can have bowel movements every day to clean out their system. And, you know, if you do those things to sort of like clean out the pipes, it's like changing the filter, changing the oil in your car and changing the filter on your furnace. I mean, the body is a self-correcting, self-regulating mechanism. It wants to be healthy. And if you stop putting bad stuff in it and start putting good stuff in it, it will regenerate and start to take care of itself.
Okay. Now, one question. When you say vitamin D, you're referring to vitamin D3, correct, or any vitamin D?
No, vitamin D3. I mean, that's pretty common knowledge these days, yep.
Okay. It's semi-common, and I guess in this group it is, but it may not be with some people. I just want to be specific for other people. I was guessing, but just want to be sure. Okay. Thanks very much for the information and for your presentation. Both very, very good.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I appreciate that feedback.
And Star One raises your hand for any other questions for Dr. Sherry. She's here for a limited time with us. And Dr. Sherry, you know, we all go into a doctor's office and they wear white coats. And what would you tell people that always think the doctor's right and the doctor says, you know, by the way, you might be at high risk for the flu this year, so let's give you a shot?
So which part of that do you want me to address, Joanne? About not getting the shot or about whether or not you should believe the doctor?
Well, you can address them both if you would, please, because I know that's a dilemma for people, and sometimes they get bullied.
Well, now there's the core source of what you just said about being a bully, because we have somehow, and I think this came out of like the 1950s when every night on the news, or 1950s, early 1960s, that every night on the news you would hear, you know, that today the American Medical Association, blah, 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 and the AMA, which is nothing more than a professional organization, they don't have any clout anymore, but at the time they did, you know, with the American Medical Association, this, that, and the other thing. And the doctors, you know, in their white coats started raising in status, and started raising economically in status. And what was happening at that time is that healthcare and medicine really wasn't advancing, but technology was. And we had all these really gadgets like CAT scans and MRIs and the colonoscopies and all these different things that were coming to the forefront. And so it made medicine look like the new wonder child. And after the 1940s, when we instituted antibiotics, which really did change the planet initially, and if antibiotics are used appropriately, they're a really good thing. The problem is that they're used pervasively and inappropriately, which has caused a lot of problems. So out of the 50s, we developed this whole parental attitude about medicine. The doctor knows best. I am the doctor. I give orders. The nurse obeys my orders. You, patient, are going to take an order from me and go get an antibiotic or go get a lab test or something like that. And we have this cognition of instead of this being an adult-to-adult conversation, I'm a doctor, I'm 50, and I'm talking to you, patient, who's also 50, and we're going to have an adult-to-adult conversation about what is in the best interest of you, patient, your health. Instead, we end up with this doctor-parent and then this authoritarian thing that looks down on this adolescent or child person, and we have allowed that to happen to us. If we were in our workplace, if you were at your job, it doesn't matter what your job is, and you're standing there talking to a colleague, and a colleague, the same age as you or whatever, maybe they have a little different skill set. They may be a little bit more into one thing than another. But if they try to condescend to you and treat you like a parent and talk down to you and talk like you're bad, 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 we wouldn't put up with that in a nanosecond, or at least we shouldn't. It's like, excuse me, don't talk to me like that. And the same thing is what we should do with these doctor bullies. In fact, I started an area on my website, on drtenpenny.com, to collect bully stories. And I've got several hundred of parents who are bullied by a human being who happens to be standing there in a white coat telling them that they're a bad parent over the choices they're making and bullying them into doing something that they don't think is in the best interest of their child that is in their possession. We've got to stop that. And the first place that it's going to stop is if we simply don't allow it. I mean, you know, look at that doctor standing there, him or her, in a white coat, and imagine, you know, imagine him standing there naked. I mean, there's a book, it's what, probably the best book on public speaking I think I've ever read. It was called I Can See You Naked. And it's the training on standing up in front of a group to not be intimidated. And so what if suddenly you looked at that doctor who's standing there in a white coat and you imagine them with purple and pink underwear on, and they were, or in a t-shirt and a pair of jeans, and they were just there standing there just like you are, and you're supposed to just be having a conversation, and they tried to bully you then, would you put up with it? No, you'd scoop your child up out of the room and say, I was here for a specific purpose, I'm paying you for a service, and if you're going to treat me like that, not only am I leaving this room with my child in possession, I'm going to go to the nearest telephone booth, and I'm going to call the state medical board, and I'm going to report you for bullying me. And in my opinion, that's one of the things that I think that we should start doing, because state medical boards, by law, have to investigate every complaint that they get about every doctor. We have very strong laws in this country right now about bullying. I mean, think about it with kids, and these kids with guns, and what happens to them, and all this other stuff. We've got laws about bullying and how you can sue people over this. I think we need to start pulling these, taking these doctors to task and calling the state medical board. And whether you want to give your real name or not, that's up to you. It depends on how bold you want to be. But you could say, I was just in Dr. Jones' office, and they condescended me, were pressuring me, were telling me what to do, were threatening me, and they were bullying me, and I want to report this bully to the state medical board. And I think if a doctor started getting 5, 10, 15, 20 cases of calls like that, not only would the state medical board have to investigate that, and he'd have to kind of change his tune, but eventually, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, what would happen is that would sort of trickle back to his malpractice insurance carrier. And the malpractice insurance carrier might think that if this doctor is this much of a bully and is getting all these threats and the state reported to the state medical board, maybe I shouldn't insure him, or maybe he's a bigger risk for malpractice, and maybe I should double his rate. And what if that economically started to have an impact on these bullies who are treating adults the way that they treat them, just because you have a different opinion than what they do? Because when you go to the doctor, after all, what are you paying for? You're paying for their opinion. And I think that this could be a way to empower people to take back their strength and to feel like they've got some recourse from this bullying. And I've talked a lot about this at several conferences recently, and I can see people's face sort of brighten up like, yeah, it's something that you're right, I should report that. And maybe if we do that just a little at a time, maybe things will start to change.
Great, thank you. We have another couple hands up. Hi, your first name, please.
Hi, it's Judy in the UP. Thank you, Dr. Sherry, for sharing with us. You have answered a couple of my questions, but I think you brought it up but didn't get into any detail on how to exempt the children from the vaccines and still get them into school. Or does that vary from state to state, and how do you go about finding that out?
It does vary from state to state, and you have to know your state law. And the place to find your state law most easily and most consolidated is if you go to the National Vaccine Information Center site. The National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org.
NVIC.org. Mm-hmm. National Vaccine
Information.
Information.
Center.
Mm-hmm.
Center. So it's NVIC.org. And when mm-hmm. you go to their site, in their navigation bar at the top, I believe there's a button that says laws or something like that. And a window will, or legal, or it might even say exemption, but it's something about legal. And if you click on that button, a map of the United States will drop down on all 50 states, and you can click on your state, and it will immediately show you what your exemption rules are.
Yeah. You know, I was going to, when this was 32 years ago with my son, and I didn't want him to get the shots then because the first one, he had a bad reaction. He got all swelled up and hurt everywhere, and he thought he was dying. And so I told the doctor I didn't want any more, and he said, oh, well, you won't be able to get him into school. So we fell for that lie.
And those exemption laws, most of them were written in the early 1900s. And the problem is that, well, that was, they were written when there was only one vaccine, which was smallpox. Now the exemption laws really, the exemption laws really only cover K through 12. And I saw this problem starting about 8 years ago when all these parents would spend all this time doing all these things to keep their kids from being vaccinated, and then they would go to college. And then the colleges are now starting to request and demand these particular vaccines. And so I think it's important for parents to understand that they may have to do some, some creative things to keep their kids from being vaccinated when they go into college, like declaring a religious exemption, having medical issues brought to light, and sometimes just check the box.
Okay, that's it. Now, how big a team have you got with you working on a campaign for education? And, of course, you said billboards, and once this money rolls, and it looks like very, very soon, there will be money from Freedom Club. That might be one of the projects that we would like to support, is to get that information out there in any way possible.
Well, that would be awesome. Believe me, there's no shortage of things to do.
And then I know Tom didn't have anything else to do, but there are those claims against world or through world court against so many.
with the one project, of course, ONE, our New Earth, this is where we are going head to head through the world court to put an end, not just, you know, label GMOs, end them, and get rid of them.
Yes.
Not just alert people, get rid of them, you know.
Well, they have in some countries. They've just eliminated them.
Yep, it can be done. So
can be done.
That's on a roll. It's building steam.
Yeah. Well, thank you for you doing what it is a snowball. The more we know, the more we know, and the more we share, and the more people who wake up, and the word gets around. So keep it up, kids. And thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hi, your first name, please.
Mark from California.
Hi.
How you doing? I started studying the vaccine thing almost 35 years ago, and I was wondering if she, the doctor, had found out some of the information I found out back then. It went back more than 200 years, and they knew what they were doing because some of the research I found said that the epidemics didn't break out until the vaccines had been given. And I wondered if you found any evidence of that when you were doing your research.
Well, sure. I mean, the first vaccination was actually in the 10th century in China, where they were doing vaccination for smallpox. And the difference was, and what they did then was, instead of taking cow pus from the belly of a cow and taking a knife and cutting up your arm and then slathering on this cow pus on your arm and watching it fester, instead of doing that, what the Chinese had actually done was they had taken smallpox scabs and they'd actually crushed them into a powder, and they would have people inhale them, which was more the way that you would get a more of a natural immunity, almost as if you would have the infection. And so, you know, that does go back at least that far and maybe further back. And when they started using the smallpox vaccine around the world, when the missionaries were going around the world spreading the gospel, they were also spreading vaccines. And along with spreading the vaccines, they were spreading syphilis. And there were syphilis epidemics that started all over the world. And when we started with the polio vaccine, we are still causing polio by using the oral polio vaccine in third world countries. So, and I'm sure there's a lot more than that, and this is just briefly off the top of my head of things that have been going on for a long time.
Yeah. Well, Annette, when you were calling it bullying, I've been calling that voodoo for years. That's the doctors playing their voodoo with us. Because we want to believe everything they say. They're gods, of course, because they can save lives or take it. But I read this little article in Reader's Digest a few years back, and it said that, and it used the word murder. The U.S. hospitals murder 1.3 million people a year. This wasn't accidental deaths or anything like that. This is a sweet little magazine that's never got a bad thing to say about anybody, but we lose 70,000 Americans in the Vietnam War, and we're burning flags in the street, and yet the hospitals in this country are getting rid of that kind of people, that number, and nobody knows about it or says anything about it or does anything about it. And I just got to experience a trip to the hospital, the emergency room, with I had a sore tooth, which turned out to be 5 days in the ICU. Yeah, 468 pharmaceuticals they pumped into my body in 5 days. And when my healer found out about it, she couldn't even believe I was still alive. And I almost didn't make it through the trip. But, yeah, the hospitals are an interesting place to visit. Stay away from them if you can. But I appreciate you bringing the awareness to people. Because until people understand what's going on, I'm surrounded by tons of people who say, no, the doctors are the best resort for anything going wrong with you. And we've been trying to preach the gospel since, well, for 35 years before our kids were born. We found out about it before we had kids, and we tried to keep our kids out of all that stuff. And it was hard back then. It's almost impossible now if you go through a hospital with childbirth. But thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for your work, and keep spreading the word.
And Dr. Charisse, do you have any advice for health workers who are threatened to be terminated in hospital settings or office settings if they don't get vaccinated? What kind of power do they have?
Well, the healthcare worker issue is another thing that I saw come in about 5 or 6 years ago, because they were starting to pepper the public health literature with all the information about they were doing everything they could to get healthcare workers vaccinated with the flu shot. They tried the carrot technique, and then they tried, you know, this push-pull technique, and now they have the stick technique. And in the United States, in the U.S., really the only real good recourse that you have is a religious exemption. I tried five or six years ago to get people to get the band together that could see this was coming, find your like-minded people, start protecting yourself and making people aware that, you know, unfortunately, it's like in the American way is that unless, you know, you hear the tornado siren going off, but unless you're standing in your living room looking out the window and you can actually see the tornado right in front of your house, you really don't go to the basement. I mean, you just hear that nasty siren over there, and maybe it just went off by accident. Well, it was the same thing with this healthcare workers thing. And now we are really to the point of the only real recourse that you really have is a religious exemption. And the person in the country, in my opinion, who has had the most success at helping healthcare workers get a religious exemption at their place of employment is Alan Phillips. And Alan Phillips is in North Carolina, and I believe his website is vaccinerightsattorney.com, vaccinerightsattorney.com. He likes to do things in groups to save on costs. And he is the expert in the country on helping these healthcare workers, because it's only going to get worse. And I think we're headed down a very slippery slope here with these flu shots, because now if you can require someone to get something injected into their system that can cause harm, possibly even kill you, cause Guillain-Barré syndrome, and there's more and more published literature that shows that vaccines do not work, and particularly flu shots. They do not keep you from getting the flu, period, end discussion, and that's true for every age group, whether it's infants, children, middle-aged adults, or seniors. Now, there was a report that came out yesterday that said that last year's flu shot worked maybe 9% of the time in people 65 years of age and older. They don't work, and they're contaminating your body with stray viruses that have the potential for causing cancer. They have formaldehyde in them, a known carcinogen. You're injecting three viruses that can go together and change, do all kinds of terrible things to your genetics. So now we're heading down the slippery slope of you have to get this injection to keep your job. Well, maybe next year you're going to have to also get a measles shot. And maybe the year after that we're going to add a pneumonia shot. And then after that, if you're having a bad day and you're kind of grouchy, go down to the pharmacy because now you're going to have to start taking your Prozac every day. We've headed down a very slippery slope, and we've allowed this to happen. We have gotten the government and the laws we deserve because we didn't stand up and do anything. And that's one of the value of being a Freedom Club member, is because Tom goes out of his way and spends all this time to educate people to stand up, know the information. The American Revolution started with a handful of people. It didn't start with the whole country revolting. It started with a handful of people who stood up and said, I'm mad at selling, I'm not taking it anymore. And they lost everything. I mean, if you read the history of that, they lost their homes, their estates, they lost their lives. They were willing to sacrifice everything because of what they believed in. What are you willing to sacrifice this week for what you're willing to believe in and make a better choice about your food or stand up and say no to a vaccine or file a religious exemption at your place of work? Or to stand up to your employer and say, you can't do this to me. We're going to stop this. In the state of Ohio, we're actually looking at filing a new law into legislation that says it's illegal for and against your sovereign rights for an employer to require you to get a flu shot in exchange for employment. It's against your civil rights. We've got to start getting active with those things. What's happened to us as a society? Have we gotten so wimpy? I mean, we started as a country with a bunch of people in a little bitty boat that came all across an ocean, that came over here, didn't have a house, didn't have food, didn't know what they were running into to come across here, and stood up against all these things. And now, 200 years later, you know, we'd rather sit on our couch and play with our Xbox. We need to get some power back. And I think that's one of the values of being a Freedom Club member, is to empower you with information. And so maybe from this talk tonight, people will get a little bit stronger and take that little bitty baby step. And one baby step will be another baby step and another baby step. So first thing you know, you've walked 1,000 miles.
And I
you say it so well.
An excellent point to wrap up with, Cheryl. You said it extremely well. Thank you so much. You've been an outstanding guest. Thank you.
You know what, Tom? If I may, there's one more thing I'd like to make a point about. Can
sure.
I do that?
Go right ahead.
Because there's one other piece that comes up sometimes that I've been asked. I get emails probably once or twice a week now saying, my husband and I were married. We had children. When we had children, we both agreed that we were not going to vaccinate. Now we're getting divorced. And I'm just going to say it's the husband. It could just as easily be the other way around. But the husband now is going to declare me to be an unfit mother if I don't take the kids and get them vaccinated. Dr. Tenpenny, can you please write me an affidavit? Can you please do something to support me to keep my husband from taking my kids and getting them vaccinated, or the other way around? The answer to that is no, because you need to keep that discussion out of the courtroom. You need, because the judge is not there to make new law. The judge is there to uphold kind of usual and customary, and still 95% or more of the people in our country blindly vaccinate their kids and think that you are a bad parent if you don't do this. The judges are not going to rule in your favor. I don't think that they're going to go down the road of creating new case law or new case law precedent. So you need to keep that discussion out of the courtroom. And this is what I've advised people to do, and it seems to be working. you sit down, let's say that you're the wife and you don't want to vaccinate and the husband does, and what that is all about, again, is about money. Because the husband doesn't want to, if he can get the kids away from you, then he doesn't have to pay child support. So they are willing to put their child as a football in the middle of the floor and kick their immune system around over money. So don't let it go to the courtroom. You get your attorney, and you say to your attorney, the wife, say to the attorney, we're going to sit down and we're going to arbitrate this out. And the husband then comes in with his attorney, and maybe you need a third-party arbitrator, but you've got your legal representation there. And you say, you the wife say, you know my position on vaccines, and you know that, as well as I do, that they can cause harm. So therefore, if you enforce this and insist that they vaccinate, from this day forward, for the rest of that child's life, any medical bill that comes up, it doesn't matter if they have a cold, a sprained ankle, or anything that ever happens to them from a medical perspective, you, husband, will be 100% responsible for those bills. And to be fair, if we don't vaccinate them and the child gets sick, I'll take care of the health care bills, because we know that unvaccinated kids are a lot more healthy and they don't go to the doctor and they really don't get sick. But the vaccinated kids get very sick. You will be responsible for all of it. And in the event that something adverse happens, you will take care of 100% of it. And if we, have to, we can, you know, maybe you can actually even give in and say, just so it is an arbitration, it is a discussion, and say, I don't want them to have any vaccines. We can, is there one particular vaccine, just one, that you feel so strongly about, that you are so horrified and terrified of polio or measles or something like that? You know, we'll do that, but you, if an adverse event happens, down the road, all the way the rest of their life, as long as they're under your care, 18 years of age, you will be responsible for 100% of their medical bills. I can tell you from personal experience, people have taken great pause at that, because particularly if the husband previously had agreed with this whole non-vaccination thing and understood that there was harm that could come from that, then maybe they might decide that arguing about money for child support and making somebody be a bad parent and all this other stuff, maybe that's not the way to go. So I just throw that out there, Tom, because I get so many phone calls and emails. I'm telling you, I get two or three a week of people, of the non-vaccinating parent, whether it's the mom or the dad, begging me to, can they hire me to talk to the judge? Can I write an affidavit? Is there any other attorney that will represent them? It's not going to work. But if you bring it down to talking about money and putting in that perspective and not getting it in the chamber, doing it outside of there, then there's no guarantees that come with that. But I think it will give people a different perspective on how to navigate that very difficult situation.
And the ultimate choice, as I see it, actually is a legal action. We call it the world court, courts that aren't bought off by the drug industry and by the banks and the like. Who are here under common law, where the people have the power, do what the people say. That is their job, to obey what the people say. And as long as you have the evidence to back it up, I feel our odds are extraordinarily good. Well, if somebody wants to go out and poison their child, I guess, there's consequences for that, and that'll be determined later, but there can be no mandatory any vaccination is the way I would approach this process. If you want to make a voluntary choice and stick a needle in yourself, that's your business. But if it's your child, well, you know, that's a little iffy. You know, is that criminal? You know, you can start to make a case that way, too. You're harming your child. But now, first, here's the facts. Here's the truth. But let's, first of all, ban anything that's mandatory, period, and put the people back in control. So that is the mission of the World Court process, the GSA process, which is in development. So stand by, folks. We've got a big one on our hands. And we've got a few more. We're going to take them all on, and we're going to win. Well, thank you, Sherry, for your incredible work here you've done over the years. I was duly impressed. I knew a lot about you. I know a lot more now, and I was truly awed by your presentation here today. And thank you so much. We may ask you to come again at a future time if we can squeeze you in.
Yes, well, truly amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and I hope that I think that you probably got a lot of people in Freedom Club that probably were already on board with this whole concept. Hopefully this will give them a few more, you know, arrows for their quiver. And come join me on Facebook at Dr. Tenpenny on Vaccines and be amongst a bunch of like-minded people. So there's powers in numbers. So thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate the time.